Welcome to the Self-Care Spotlight, presented by The Journal Deck, a product and brand rooted in self-care and living your truth. Hi, I'm Melissa Cousins, your host and The Journal Deck creator. Self-care might be a trendy word, but it's so much more than a Sunday. It's a lifestyle that can change your life. And in a world where we are more stressed than ever, we have to go deeper than occasional bubble baths and massages. Feel better, do better. This podcast is about getting to the heart of living your most aligned life against the backdrop of everyday life. Energy management, healing, radiance expansion, self-care elevated. Through my solo episodes and interviews with inspiring women who are just as likely to meditate as they are to curse. The goal of this podcast is to empower you to unapologetically take up space and make space. And remember, self-care can change the world by changing yours first. Are you ready? Hello, hello. This is December 2nd when I am recording this, which means I'm just coming off of the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday weekend. It also means that because of that, I am waiting very last minute to record this intro because the podcast is coming out on Tuesday, December 3rd, if you're listening to this the day that it comes out. But that's okay because this is what happens during holiday season, right? We kind of procrastinate on things. Our schedules are a little bit different, but that's all right. We're celebrating, and that is just as much a part of our self-care as being with our family and our friends and celebrating being together, celebrating another year, right? So with that being said, we are in the month of December, and I think it is on December 22nd this year that we have the winter solstice coming up. And I looked back, I did a little research, and all the way back on December 12th, 2017, I had put out an episode that was only number 35 of the podcast. That was like the first year of this podcast. And it was called The Season of Light, Learning from Yule, Plus Winter's Gift of Darkness and Holiday Blues. So Winter's Gift of Darkness, Learning from Yule, like, right, Yuletide carols. So what that means about learning from darkness is that the winter solstice is actually a celebration of light. So that seems like a bit of a paradox because the title of that podcast episode from back in 2017 was about learning from winter's gift of darkness. And yet winter solstice is about the light, the season of light. What does that mean then? Okay, well, if you were to listen to that episode, you could totally go back and listen to it for a detailed description. I will put a link for that in the show notes. But essentially, it's the idea that winter, the solstice, is about going inward. Think hibernation like animals do. You go inward into the dark. Literally, there is more darkness at this time of year. Where I am in Pittsburgh, it gets dark literally at like 4:30. It's dark. And we know that once the winter solstice comes on December 22nd this year, that means that every day after that, the sun stays out just a little bit longer, just a little, until you get all the way to right to spring. And that's when we have this balance between light and dark, and then all the way into summer solstice, of course, which is when we have the longest day of light of the year. And then every day after that, it gets darker a little bit faster, right? Because then we're moving into darkness. So with winter, with the solstice, once that hits, guys, you know, we're moving on up. We're moving into the light. We're moving towards the light. But we have to go internal first, right? We have to go into the dark to get to the light. And I think that is such a beautiful metaphor for life, right? Because it's that tunnel, right? It's that idea that it's not like you're going to go through that tunnel and that there's no light on the other side. It's that faith in knowing that if you go in, that on the other side, that you know that there is light. Even if you can't see that light yet, you know that it's there. You know that if you keep tunneling through all of your hard stuff, your deep shit, the hurts, the wounds, the thing that you thought that you healed, you thought that you were over and you weren't, right? You know that if you keep digging, you keep taking the shovel, right? And you go in, it's that faith in knowing that there is light at the end of that tunnel, right? That's what winter is all about. Going inward, it's a time of reflection, internal work, because we know that we're going to come out on the other side into that light, literally and figuratively. And that is essentially what we're going to be talking about today on the podcast. For the season finale of season 4 about healing, I invited my friend Jen on. And this is something I haven't done before, where I brought someone on that I really truly just consider to be a friend. And we sat down and talked about her healing journey, because I believe that it is extremely inspirational and touching and raw and real and beautiful and messy and hard to talk about and even hear about. And yet it's her story. And I believe in the power of sharing our story and how it can touch other people, just like how this podcast touches people all the time when I share things and people tell me that it touched them in some way, right? So Jen's story, and really any story, I think, of healing, deep internal soul healing, is about exactly that. It's the winter gift of darkness. It's about going in, digging in, seeing your wounds, sitting with them, looking them right in the eye, seeing your fear, seeing your hurts, your triggers, all of it, going in because you know that there is healing and light on the other side. And Jen right now is in a gorgeous place in her life. She is sitting in that light right now because she has gone through the darkness and sat with it. So at this time of year, I thought it would be perfect to, you know, really have someone on, a 100% real woman on, to talk about her healing journey from dark to light. And with all of that being said, let's jump into the show. Okay, I know that I said we were getting into the show, but two things. Number one, most seriously, this is a trigger warning, okay? The subjects that Jen is going to talk about, I feel that I want to preface with saying that we're going to discuss adoption, foster care, rape, and sexual trauma, and suicide. So there are a lot of potentially triggering subjects to this episode. So that's number one. Number two, on a lighter note, if you stick all the way to the end, I am going to be announcing the theme for season 5. So just whenever you think this episode is done, and I'm thanking Jen for being here, I ask her a couple more really juicy questions that just keep popping up in my head. And then eventually, her and I say goodbye. And then I wrap with the season 5 theme that's going to be beginning in January. So you'll get a little bit of a teaser there. Okay. Now, officially, I have nothing else that I need to say. Let's really get into this beautiful episode. I hope you love it. Hi, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Self-Care Spotlight. Today is a very special episode because this is the first time that I am ever bringing someone on to the show that, well, to be honest, she doesn't claim to be an expert. She doesn't claim to have all of the answers. She doesn't claim to have, you know, written books or any of those things. But what she is my friend, my very good friend. And the reason that she's here is because today's episode is the conclusion of season 4, which has been all about healing, right? And when I sat down to think about this literally, 2 days ago, I had this thought of, I've never had anyone come on the show that's a friend, but I had this feeling and this thought that I really needed to ask Jen to be on the show, to come share her story of healing, specifically healing the feminine and healing through the feminine with a capital F, right? Like the big feminine, like the divine feminine, if you will, right? And I thought, what a beautiful way to close this season, you know, than to, there's plenty of people that could come on here that could be authors and therapists and experts, and I've had all those people, right? But to actually have someone come on here that is a, you know, quote unquote, real woman, real person, just like you, just like me, just like any of those experts, to be quite frank, I thought that would be the best thing that I could possibly do, because when I think of someone who has done the work, like the work, it is Jen. 100%. I literally was on the couch, and that's when I texted her, because I thought Jen has done the work and she could be a case study. I know you're holding back from laughing right now, Jen. She could be a case study in getting in there and doing the nitty-gritty work, because this woman is willing to look at the shit and like roll around in it. And come out on the other side and be awesome and beautiful and amazing. And she's at a really wonderful place now in her life. So I want to have her here to share her story with you, healing of and through the feminine. So with all that being said, I'm so very happy that you're here, Jen. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. It's an absolute honor to be here. I was totally blown away when you asked me to be here. And I'm just really excited.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A little bit, I'll give context. I'm going to give context for everyone listening. So I didn't just text you. I sent you a voice text message
that I listened to probably 3 times while getting tears in my eyes before I responded. But yes.
And I said basically the same thing. I said, when I think of someone who has done the work, I think of you. And I said, this might be a long shot, but do you want to come on the podcast and talk to, you know, like 1,000+ people and tell them all about your story and all of the heartache and the hurts and the wounds and the trauma? And I said, you know, of course it's going to be like rehashing some things, but I know that you've already looked at all of this. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I feel like hidden from you anymore.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Cause how long have you been in working with a therapist?
A great therapist who gets me and understands me, probably 4 years, but I've been working with a therapist since I was 18.
Okay. And you're how old?
33.
Okay.
That's a long time.
That's a long time. That's a long time. I think, well, actually, before I ask you kind of like to dive into the background of like, okay, what is your healing story and why are you here? Did you want to go into therapy, or was that something that was like pushed upon you in any way? Or did you want, like, this was like, I want to do this?
No, I started therapy because when I was 18, I packed my journals and I packed my baby doll and my little blanket that I got from my foster home. And I packed them all into my soccer bag, and I was taking the bus to commit myself to like an insane asylum, basically. Because, yeah, so that's where it started. And basically then like the watered down, fine, you know, tuned version of that was basically just starting therapy.
So that was your choice.
That was my choice because...
It was that or insane asylum.
it was that, or I wanted to honestly commit myself, because at that point I had realized I can do so many different things externally, but if I was stuck with my mind and who I was internally... that was the absolutely worst and scariest thing ever in my entire life. And I was like, well, it's either that or I'm going to basically kill myself. That's kind of where where the therapy journey started for me.
Did you actually have suicidal thoughts, or was that, are you saying that per phrase as a phrase, or
no,
genuinely?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
So it was kind of like between having suicidal thoughts, I'm going to commit myself to go into a psych ward, or I need to really go to therapy and take it seriously.
Yeah.
And you chose the lightest of the three options.
Yeah.
I would say. And I'm not saying that in like
way. But it was, it was, everything kind of came to this head after certain events when I was 18.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've only known Jen. I've known you only since 2017. Mm-hmm. That is insane.
March of 2017.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right, because it seems like we've known each other a lot longer. But nonetheless, we're recording this and it's November of 2019, and we've only known each other since March 2017. You came to a journal deck launch party. Yes.
I started following you on Instagram of May of 2017.
I
remember when I was excited because you finally launched a podcast that I would listen to online only. So that was just online.
It wasn't on Apple.
It wasn't on Apple or anything. Mm-mm. Nope. And then I met you in person in June of 2017.
That was the launch party.
Yeah. And I said, you're taller than I thought you would be. That was my first word saying to you. That was in June. And then you asked me to help you with your second retreat in August. You asked me in July, and your second retreat was in August of 2017.
Yeah.
So that was the first time
being a retreat assistant. Wow, so I had a good feeling about you that fast.
Yeah, I had a good feeling about you too. I mean, I've kept a journal since I was 6 years old. So, you know, anything that came up in my Instagram feed that was a journal, I was
and then the journal deck
and then the deck, yeah, and I was just,
you're like, Pittsburgh, I'm in Pittsburgh.
I know. It was everything was aligned. It was,
I remember,
fantastic.
We did Kundalini, a meditation at the launch party, and I remember you got emotional. Right?
Yeah, because first of all, you said, oh, we're gonna do a quick 10-minute meditation. I'm like, 10 minutes? I'm like, you're nuts. That's a very long time. But the minute that we started and we sat down and started chanting, I got tingles all over my entire body. I kind of just like zoned out, and something just kind of took over, and I was crying, and it was magical, but scary, but incredible all at the same time. And
you're like, well, we did the Satyanama meditation.
Mm-hmm. I was obsessed.
And, I think from that, I genuinely do think that there are certain people that you are just, are supposed to come into your life. And I think that you and I both know that that's how we are with each other. Like, there was just some thread that was connecting there for some reason that, like, we had to learn from each other in some way. And we probably will for years to come. That our stories would one day meet.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't until 2017, you know, when we were both, like, more mature adults for that matter, but nonetheless, we eventually came together.
Yep.
Yeah. And now I always say she's like another part of my brain. How did I survive 27 years without having that part of my brain? She like reads every thought that I have. If I need like a water and I don't realize I need a water, and like that's the things that you don't think are important, but they're so important.
Or before you even finish a sentence, I'm handing you exactly what you're asking for.
Yeah. Where's my phone? Like when we're on retreat, it's so real, because I can't, it's like if I'm trying to hold that space, I just need someone to like hold space for me. That is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you hold space for me in a lot of ways when I'm trying to hold space for other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah.
But it's...
I've never actually thought about that.
To keep you kind of grounded, because you're kind of floating between all of the retreat people.
Yeah. So that's how Jen and I know each other. So you and I then kind of started out more or less, I'd say it was almost more of not on like the friend end, but then it just progressed to that point now where now we're like sitting at my dining room table recording this, and you came over after work, and you know, it's like now we're, which it's like for me, it feels like more like friend now first and then work second, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't start that way. And I think it's interesting that it evolved and that friendship like flip-flopped in that way. For like the needs of what we needed, I guess, and how it started versus now, right? It changed. It evolved.
It did evolve, yes.
Yeah, which is interesting. But because of that, I've learned a lot more about you that I didn't know in the beginning. And you came on my retreat, and you were really vulnerable, and you had a lot of shares. And that's when a lot of stuff came up about your background that I didn't know. And we will talk about the retreat and the kind of timeline of that, when it happened, when you came to it for the first time. But for the sake of timeline, can you explain how you got to that point, like you said, when you were 18 and you had this, I'm going to either commit myself, I'm going to kill myself, or I'm going to go to therapy. Like, what brought you to that point in your life?
Okay. So I am adopted.
Oh, I want to pause for 1 second. Okay. Not to cut you off. I just want to say that this is for anyone. This could be a trigger for certain things that Jen will talk about. I think that's valid to say. She's going to bring up different subjects that have happened to her. So I do want to say, insert trigger warning if you're sensitive to certain subjects. You've been kindly warned, or if there are baby ears as well. Okay. Continue.
Okay. So I was adopted. You know, I was in the womb for 9 months, and then I was in a foster home for 9 months. And then my adoptive parents, who I'll just say my parents, they're the ones who raised me, they got me when I was 9 months old. Yeah, I mean, I was raised. They would often, when I was a child, read me stories. And instead of, you know, Johnny and Sally or whatever, they would insert my name saying that I was adopted. But I never understood. I just kind of would always just laugh at them and say, oh, you know, that's just a story that's made up. It never really sunk in, what they were trying to get across to me. And I mean, like most, you know, kids do, you have chores around the house every weekend. And so, I've dusted and cleaned my house, you know, that I grew up in more times than I could possibly count. And there's a plaque right on the wall, that has a poem on it. And it says, not flesh of my flesh, nor bone of my bone, but still miraculously my own. It has my name and it has the date that I was born and then the date that I arrived. And so, I mean, you're a kid, I never put it together. I would run to that plaque all the time when I was learning, you know, the year that I was born and learning my birth date and things, and I just never put it together. One day I was cleaning the bedroom. It was February 13th, 1999. I was cleaning my parents' bedroom that, you know, I've cleaned multiple times, and there's a book right there that says, why was I adopted? Black and white, plain as day. And the one section is for kids and then the other section is for adults. And in that book, I found that poem. And, you know, I'm cleaning the house and it was a weekend and I heard the garage door go up and my dad was home from work early and my mom came upstairs and was like screaming and was like, what are you doing? Dinner's not ready. Like, we have to get ready. And I just sat down and I said, Mom, like, what is this? Like, am I adopted? And she's like, I don't even remember saying those words. They just kind of flew out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, did you not hear what I said? Dinner's not ready. You know, we don't have time for this. And I was just kind of like, okay. And put the book back and just kind of finished cleaning. Then my father called me downstairs and they told me. So I was 13 years old by the time that they finally told me. And that was tough because I was already in the acne and braces phase and, you know, already thinking, you know, oh, boys don't like me. And, you know, that was tough. So then to find out that, you know, technically like your own mother didn't want you. And, it took many years to kind of piece it together that, you know, my parents wanted me so much. And
did they tell you that night?
That I was adopted?
The night you found the book, did they tell you that you were adopted?
They did, same night. Yeah, they did, yeah. Once they called me downstairs and then, like, we kind of sat down and I just kept crying and crying. And I mean, they
were they planning to tell you? Is that why they had
no,
the book?
No, not that. I mean, they've had that book for as long as I was there, for the first 13 years of my life, and they would read to me out of that book, and it's been there all the time. I just never noticed it, right? Like, it just kind of revealed itself, I guess, at the time that I was ready for it. I don't, I'm not sure. I mean, they would point blank tell me, but in story form, not in fantasy. You know what I mean? It was like more fantasy than it was like in reality.
Did they say that they planned to tell you at some point?
They said that they tried multiple times and that, you know, they wanted to like take me away on vacation and do it on vacation. And then there would be times that like, oh, we were just having so much fun. So we just waited and waited and waited. And it just kind of snowballed.
When is the right time?
Yeah. And then it just kind of kept going and going. And so, yeah. So I found out when I was 13.
Which is, I don't know, have you thought about this fact that 13 is like the divine feminine number?
Oh, well, yeah, 13 is my, I was born on
13. Yeah, we're both born on 13. So you found out on a 13.
I was.
You were 13.
Yeah.
It's a lot of 13 energy. Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's the divine feminine
number. Yeah, and it was exactly like 1 month before like my 14th birthday. It's just, so yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot there. Yeah. Mm.
Okay. So 13-year-old Jen finds out she's adopted. And then I'm guessing you found out that that was when you found out I was in foster care for 9 months. And right. Like you started piecing everything. They started telling you.
Yeah. Yeah. It all kind of, I mean, so it was a private closed adoption. So my parents actually took shifts waiting in line for 2 days to get on the wait list to get a baby. And then they were on the wait list for 5 years.
Wow.
And so I just remember, you know, my parents saying like, do you understand like how difficult it is to get a healthy white baby, you know, in the United States?
Wow.
And that like, it was a big struggle for them. Mm. I mean, they tried to have a baby for 10 years and it was just like, it was very difficult for them.
What's the relationship with them now as an adult?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. So, I mean, in one hand, you know, they tried so hard to have a baby and they fought so hard to adopt me. And, you know, they did the best that they could, like any parent does. But I mean, obviously, like, I feel like every child always kind of wants more or something else or, you know, my mother is just a very passive aggressive human. And
your adopted mother,
my mother, so yeah, she, you know, they got me when I was 9 months and so I knew no different. But so from 9 months to 13, if not longer, my home life wasn't always the greatest either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just it now, you know, looking back, it's just, you know, it is what it is, but like at the time, she was verbally abusive, she was physically abusive, she would spit on me and tell me I was worthless multiple times, all the time.
And you wouldn't, I guess the word would be expect that from someone who did a 2-day, sat in a line to get on a wait list to wait in 5 years, and it almost is like that doesn't correlate.
Well, yeah, but it, you know, it's easy for her to write off and say, oh, you know, I was so stressed, or, you know, you provoked me, or this, that, the other.
Sure, but those aren't normal responses of a parental figure,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And this is all things you've worked out in therapy at this point. Like, we know that's not normal, that type of abuse of behavior. So, okay. I know that, like, there's so many pieces in between that part, but so far there's the, you know, there's foster care, there's adoption, there's finding out not until you're 13 at a really, at that prime, like, adolescent time, there's not having the best childhood necessarily, even from the adoptive parents. That brings you then to the 18-year-old.
Yeah, well, I mean, so then the last kind of adoption piece was they... The last thing that they kind of wrapped up the conversation with was, well, you can't tell anyone.
Mm.
It's on a need to know basis. And so only in select emergency situations, like you're allowed to tell your physician or things like that. But, and I mean, it like part, like a very small part of it makes sense. Cause like, you know, like little eighth grader is going to walk in and girls are cruel, you know, like I'm going to walk in the next day, you know, and tell everyone that I was adopted. But It was very, looking back, it's just shame.
It's like a very shameful thing.
Yeah. But again, it was very passive aggressive, because they would also say, you know, you can never have too many people that love you, you know, and family is what you make it. And they would fully support me in petitioning the court and finding my biological mother and father if I was ever interested in it. But don't tell anyone. So it was just, it was very like, message. Everything in my life growing up was that mixed passive aggressive kind of messages.
So then when you did get to 18, you did petition the court and you did find your biological mother.
I did. Yes. I did.
And
I
you are still in relationship with her. Like, yes, you still keep in contact with her. Yeah. And you said you're 34 now.
33.
Whoa, you just aged yourself.
You said 34. I was like, 34, 33. Yes, 33.
You're like, 35. What am I saying? Okay. So by the time, though, like, here's the thing I think about all of that, you know, there's so much that everyone always says. You know, we're having someone come on the podcast next season because it's all about relationships. And we're going to be having a therapist come on, and she specifically does inner child work of the self.
I've done a lot of that. Yes.
I'm sure that you have. And it honestly, obviously makes so much sense, because those are our years of forming who we are and our identity and our, you know, how we're going to. It's the start. I mean, it's the beginning, literally. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, my question then, before we get into then how the hell did you kind of heal from all of these traumatic experiences, because that's what they were, on different levels, by the time then that you were at an age where you started being in relationships then with men, right? Then other things started happening, right? Then that's when things started to, you experienced other situations that were traumatic, right?
Yes. Yeah. I dated in high school, but nothing ever. I was too busy being a perfectionist, basically, to get accolades and to get noticed by my parents, and to have that kind of, not that they weren't loving. It was just always this, like, it's easier to remember the bad and the painful things than the good. But yeah, so when I was 18, I was just a very goody-goody in high school, and I never, you know, I never drank. I never did anything kind of out of line. But one night after work, I went and hung out with my girlfriend after work, and she went to her boyfriend's house, and we were bringing them food from work, and her boyfriend had a roommate, and yeah, he was kind of cute, but it was a boy, I don't know. But so we had a couple beers. It was the first time I've ever had beer. Mm. And they were 5 years older than I was. So they were like 23, 24. And it wasn't just like Iron City, you know, something light kind of beer. It was like good stouts, good kind of beer. So that was like my first, my first couple beers. So it was the first time I was ever drunk. And it was also the night that I lost my virginity, but I was raped. So I don't remember. I don't remember initiating. I don't remember any of that happening. I remember where I fell asleep in the living room, and then I remember where I woke up in bed, in pain, and
nothing else in between.
Yeah, and
which unfortunately a lot of women listening to this will be able to relate to.
Yeah, and so I kind of woke up shaking and hungover, and I actually smoked cigarettes at that time, and I just sat there shaking and chain smoking, basically, until my friend was ready to wake up and drive me home. But like anything, a trauma bond has already was already formed at that point. So I did what any, girl who's searching for love would do. And, it made sense in my head that, oh, he must have just really loved me, and I must have, asked for it, and that, I was just so irresistible that, you know, I kind
or
of...
Or I drank too much or...
I made a story and then I proceeded to date him and and try and, like, make it all work, you know, work out. But you can't really start a relationship in that manner. No. And
I haven't heard that term, though, trauma bond. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's And I mean, that's where it starts. And that's just, it's the worst relationship you could possibly be in. It's lying, it's cheating, it's physical, it's violent, but it makes up with, like, it's just bad.
Right.
It was bad.
Right. It's like a hurricane. It just sounds right. So, oh my gosh. And I don't say this in a way to be light of it. But truly, like, I feel like there's so much that, like, you specifically, in terms of anything to do with God, like healing trauma, like, you know about it. Like, you've been.
I always kind of do that.
But, like, in terms of, then that's why, guys, I wanted to have her on, because this is someone who. If we're talking about healing, those big things that people heal from or need to heal from are usually their family related, their sexual trauma related, you know, their body image related, which is something I know that we'll probably get to in this conversation as well, which obviously that's connected to if you've had sexual traumas. There's just a lot there that you have been through. But the thing is that you've come out on the other side.
I have.
Right?
Yeah.
You have. And, like, that's why I wanted you to be here.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to be this, like, shining light, really, of what is on the other side of doing that deep healing work. You know? And specifically within the feminine realm, which you have done. So, do you mind if I ask you about that? Like, the journey there, like, your specific healing journey. Like, I just have some questions that are just bubbling in my head right
now. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay. So, the feminine, when people say, like, well, first let me ask this. Do you feel, is that correct of me to say that you feel like the work of the feminine has very much been a part of your healing journey? Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Can you explain that?
So, on our first retreat together, you talked a lot about, you know, you talked about, like, Shiva and Shakti and masculine and feminine energy. And I think my exact words are, oh, well, that's dumb. That's weak.
In your head, this is what you
were saying? Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I mean, like, I probably have the journal here somewhere because, again, I've kept a journal since I was 6 years old. So I was doing some me search for this podcast, like, instead of research. But no, I mean, anything flowery, anything pink, anything. And I mean, obviously there's more to the feminine than that. But, like, you know, feeling beautiful was a waste of time. And
flow yoga,
you know, I could not. I hated yoga. Absolutely. I was only there for the chanting. Like, honestly,
and,
like,
I remember, granted, your ankle was, like, not great at that time. But I remember you looked pissed doing the yoga class. Like, guys, her face was straight stoic.
Well, because I could not be with my body. I hated my body. I hated the feeling of being in my body. I could not sit with my body. And the only way that I could do any type of meditation at that time was to have it be Kundalini, to do the chanting, to have something to focus on. And just because I knew it was doing something incredible. It was transforming something incredible. But I wanted to make shirts that said, you know, I'm only here for the chanting. Like, that was, that was where
because,
I was.
And also, like, the movement that you were doing was very masculine centric type movement, right? Like, you were doing, what were you doing? Like, like jumping off of, like, you did, like.
Oh, mountain bike. I mean, yeah.
You were jumping off stuff.
Well, I didn't.
Scary stuff.
I raced downhill mountain bikes. I did,
like,
a lot of things.
Adrenaline junkie stuff. That I would be terrified to do.
Because that's again, I said that I used to live my life square peg round hole. That was all, you know, just keep forcing, keep forcing, keep forcing. I even said that on the first yoga retreat, like I would rather go run a half marathon right now than sit and do like 30 minutes of yoga. Mm-hmm. Like it was just, I was just in a totally different state of energy.
Right. Like stuckness too within the body. Like I could tell that you were uncomfortable and that the thought of you were like, I can't move like that. Like I'm not. I think you even said, like, I look robotic. Like, I don't look like that. Yeah. I don't look like that, right?
Well, that was my safe zone. That was, I was very, everything in my life was very harsh and very rigid. And, I mean, that was the thing. My rejection of my feminine was linked to, like, the rejection of, you know, my biological mother, you know, rejecting me. And it was linked to a lot more deep... I didn't know soft women growing up. I didn't know softness. All I knew were very like result driven, you know, just keep forcing, keep doing kind of things. So I say that, but yeah, there were some soft elements. I think now looking back that I did dance. I danced all the time but I danced with my 10-pound weights, you know, like all night because I would run all the time and I would dance. I mean, I've kept a journal.
Which journaling is very has internal always been and feminine in that way. It is, it is very internal. I mean,
yeah, my journals are my home. Like that's...
Right, that's safe space.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that it does make so much sense when you said that, like, oh, I rejected the feminine because I was rejected by the ultimate feminine. I was rejected by my own mother.
Right.
Like, whoa. That's big. I mean, literally, even me just and saying then, that out loud right now, I know.
Yeah. And then the other mother would often tell me that I was worthless. So it's like,
again, rejection of the like, mother figure, quite literally.
Yeah.
In your life, we all have a mother.
Yeah.
So I can see how that would completely mindfuck you.
Yeah.
For then, whenever I'm coming out saying, we're going to talk about the feminine energy and it's compassionate and it's loving and nurturing. And you're like,
yeah,
what? I don't like really I know that. Learned this from a different angle. I could see how that would be like resistance. Like, what is this? This isn't this. Well, she's smoking. Right. Like, this isn't true.
Well, but also I had reached a point in my journey where, I guess a lot of the deep healing was just starting. So, it was met with resistance, but then,
truth, like you knew that maybe it was real.
Well, because then I was like, you know what? Like, why the heck not? Like, I'll try it because I've tried everything else so far.
I think I remember you saying
that. Yeah, because I'm like, and that's where the surrender happened because it was like what else? Like, I am literally at the end of my fucking rope. Like, there is nothing else that I can do physically, like, to heal myself. So if this is all that I have to do, like, I might as well
give
it a try.
Yeah, let's try this femme work.
Yeah, and that was the waterfall. That was the waterfall picture where I was under the waterfall.
We went literally to a waterfall.
Yeah,
and the feminine water element.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I was crying my eyes out, but I mean, I'm a Pisces, I'm a water baby, and I couldn't breathe because.
You looked so magical.
It was the falls were just so pounding on my chest the entire time, and I'm just like, all right, like let's do this, let's flow, we are in the flow and
soft yet fierce, baby. Yeah. That waterfall was pounding on the picture. Is so great. Oh, it's so great. Yeah, that was beautiful. And you came and gave me this big hug, and that will forever be one of my favorite pictures that. Someone snapped. I think it might have been Alex.
Yeah.
She got this image of you giving me a hug. And it was just like this embrace. You're looking at me like with this joy on your face. Like in this deep.
Because I just let it all go. Like what else could I possibly. Like if really. Okay. That's all I have to do is like. I mean. Not all I have to do. It was.
That was like the beginning.
That was the beginning. Yeah. Well, but that was like the hardest, most uncomfortable step. If that's one thing. I have a knack for leaning into, like you said, the most uncomfortable.
Let's roll in the shit.
I just see myself looking like over my life, like all of these different mines, you know, that I've buried. And I just kind of like have this like evil, mischievous grin, like, okay, like what else can I like jump into next?
Have I stepped on that?
Yeah, no, well, no, I mean, I jump into them and, you know, do all the dirty work and dismantle them and then come out on the other side. Right. So
what's for you then, like that fem work that you did? What did that, like, when I say that, for some people listening, they're going to think, just tell me, Jen, like, what did you do? And this isn't to say that, like, what she did or what I did to heal when my relationship with Brad ended. Like, we all have different healing toolboxes, if you will. But I know people are going to be sitting there with their own traumas that might be similar to yours and thinking, well, what did you do? Like, if you're in a great place now.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell did you do, Jen? Like, give me the secret pill. What did you physically, I guess, what was that toolbox like? The feminine toolbox.
So my main manifestation and like affirmation was to remain present and open to the flow. That was the first main thing that like I had the mala, and that was like my blue water love mala that actually broke at your wedding. Mind you,
it totally broke. We were seriously, I think,
destined
to come together.
but I mean, that was the first, that was my big first intention, was to get fucking present. Stop. Like, yes, the past happened, but I am not rape. Me physically, I am not rape. I am not trauma. I am not abuse. Like, these things might have happened to me, but I am not them. So I had to separate myself from that. I started doing the inner child work. I started doing the inner mother work. So I had to learn how to mother myself. And mm-hmm. that's like the ultimate like kind of femme work, whether, you know. So I had affirmations. My therapist had me say these affirmations. One of the hardest affirmations that I could never say was that we are connected and you are whole. So like basically like me as a mother speaking to me as a child, you know, that we are connected and you are whole. I could not utter that sentence without crying my eyes out for almost an entire year.
So you speaking to your own child, you inner child as the mother of yourself.
I would have dreams of me going into the foster home and choosing me as a baby.
Mm.
These like dreams / nightmares that I, like, it was so real. Like, I mean, I was such a joyful have, like, baby. I mean, just, chills. But like falling in love with me and choosing me, you know, like fuck everybody else. This is my work. Like, this is like, no one else is going to do this work for me. You know, I need to lean into the most uncomfortable shit that I possibly can. And like,
choose me.
Yeah. If I want to have this life, I need to heal this life.
Right. And I know that Kundalini was important to you during this time. Oh my gosh,
Kundalini was so, your Wednesday night class was like life-changing for me. I would just would cry and cry and cry. But like the visions that I would have, like the healing visions and these ways to like help me reframe my thoughts. The one class that you had, oh my God, it was so good. I always, I don't know, I think there's like that like psychology experiment where they ask like a child to draw a tree, and my tree is always this big, beautiful, like big roots and big branches and big, but there's always that big black hole in the middle too. That's like how I would always, you know, draw my tree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would always try and think of like, oh, you know, that like big white light, you know, healing and like repairing that hole in that tree. And then the one meditation, I was like, you know what? Fuck that. Like, I don't need that. Like, I'm going to be that big, beautiful tree that has another huge, beautiful tree growing right out of the center. And it's just this whole cluster of trees that it's just like, I don't need to heal a hole. Like, that hole is always going to be there and it's always going to be with me. But I can grow something beautiful straight out of it and in it and through it, you know? So, yeah.
I love that too, because it's almost that analogy of how they say you can't go around it. You have to go through it.
Yeah. yeah.
with fear. Mm-hmm. That's like a literal example of that.
I feel like after every single one of your classes, I would just be crying. And I'm like, she thinks I'm crazy. I had a lot. But you didn't know all of like the inner details of really a lot of
stuff. I could just tell that you had a lot that you were working through, but I didn't know all the details.
Yeah.
But I also knew that there was like, I wasn't. I knew that there was some reason that this Jen girl kept coming to all of my things. I was like, she needs something. And I don't know what I'm doing for her, but like, I'm really grateful I am. And eventually, like, of course, like you and I became more friends, and then it all, like, I learned a lot more about you. But I never thought you were weird. I thought that you were going and through a lot, and you were working through a lot, more importantly, and that you were actually willing to do it. And I thought that was really brave, and you were really raw and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, you were more connected in your emotions than I have ever probably been connected to my emotions. Like, you connect, I think, very easily to them. It's a Pisces.
It's a Pisces thing.
But then there's me, and like, I'm the Leo over here, and it's like, like I told you that a therapist once asked me if I ever had a trauma that stunted my ability to be more emotional, or at least express my emotions. And I was like, excuse me. Yeah. I think that came down to my family dynamics, being one of a big family. But I never thought you were weird, ever. No, I thought that you were doing the work. You know, I could tell you were a woman doing the work. And you have, continuing with all this fem work, you do more yoga now, right?
I do.
And you've never been more in love with your body than you are right now. I mean, what did you just come back from? You just came back from
a retreat.
A retreat that was based in dancing. Yeah, dancing, I mean, yeah. Right? And you came back. I literally texted our mutual friend Emily. And I said, I didn't even tell you this. I texted her while you were still in Tulum and said, I think this is such a game-changing retreat for her. Like, this is a moment, and I don't think she'll ever be the same.
No.
I texted her that, and she said, I feel the exact same way. We literally both said that while you were in Tulum.
Yeah.
That, like, you weren't going to come back the same, Jen. Like, you were going to be the higher version of Jen.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, that's how I feel. Everything.
You were like shiny.
Everything. I know. You came back. Everyone
like,
said that.
You were like
they've
glowing.
Been saying it still since then. Everybody's noticed.
Forget pregnancy difference. Glow. It was like, I am just I into know. Myself glow.
I kept saying, well, that's what I kept saying to Emily, actually. I was like, is this too much? Am I being too much? Like, is this, I'm like,
just right.
I've never loved myself more. Like, I just,
right?
But and it took me a long, long time to get here.
33 years.
Yeah.
And now you're here.
Well, and to not need it externally because, I mean, from 18, I guess, until, you know, whenever we met, like when I was 30, whatever, that I needed that external validation. That was the very wounded feminine again, right. Just helping me survive. Because at that point, I needed it from men to, you know, validate me because there was nothing there. I never like really had many female friends, and it was just, we were like, it, you know, it was like the cattiness and it just.
But so much stems from because of that wounded feminine
right,
space.
Right.
That like, why then would I, that just makes so much obvious sense then. I need external validation, therefore, from men. And I don't feel comfortable being in close relationship with women
as
friends.
Yeah, well, because you're stuck in that comparison mindset and everything.
And well, and
like
I can
too.
See that like, oh, and that they, women as friends, aren't going to be able to give me what I need because women have never given me what I need.
Well, that, but then I was also very extra clingy with the women, the female friends that I did have, because I think in some crazy odd way, I was looking for them to mother me as well. Mm. So, I was just always very clingy, honestly, like with men and women. Like if I was dating someone, I was very untrusting because of, I didn't trust anyone. And, I equated them sleeping with me with love, everything, all of my wires were crossed. And I mean, trauma does that to the brain. It stirs it up and it shakes it up, and it makes it very, everything's misfiring and miscommunicating.
Right.
So until I actually like put the boundaries up and chose myself and started, you know, to really focus on myself and be the person that I needed growing up, mm-hmm. and like really choosing myself that way, then the healing really kind of started.
So I don't know if I've ever shared this with you actually in this way. You want me to get real with you?
Well, of course.
Okay. So I actually think that I remember when we did first meet, like those first bits of time, I do think I picked up on some of that. I don't like the word clingy, but if like, I don't know how else to say it. I think what I did was I'm very picky about who I'm friends with.
Well,
so I have like a couple very close friends, and I remember I was like, does she want us to be like best friends? Because I barely know this person, but she seems like she's super intense. And I actually think that that could have been for the betterment of our relationship, because I feel like I pumped the brakes.
Well, I was confused too, because I wanted to be more than just like your like coworker, you know, mm-hmm. I wanted to be more than like just working for you, but like I wanted to be friends. But then, because I think there was even one time where you like said something to me and I'm like, okay, like, am I invited like as a friend, or am I invited mm-hmm. as like your assistant, you know? Yeah. So I think that was just like a boundary thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so, yeah, I probably did, you know, but yeah.
I think like, though, but it progressed the right way.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, like I was cognizant enough of that, but also I am picky with who I give the friend card to.
Yeah.
Right? Like I really genuinely am. But I think our relationship just, it's interesting because I can look back and be like, no, I think it progressed exactly how it needed to get to where we are now, where it did feel like it has flipped.
Yeah.
Where it's like now like friend first and then like work second. Where is it started the opposite?
Just which either way, I mean, I'm grateful for that, because I mean, obviously I believe in your mission and anything to
do. And I'm convinced that we were supposed to come together. Yeah. Like I said, that doesn't even like, I don't question that at all.
No, but I can see that. And thank you for sharing that. That's
I've never told you that, but it's something that I think is interesting talking about. We're also going to talk about adult friendships next season too. And you know,
well, all of that, like if you haven't healed all of your childhood crap, it's totally going to influence your adult friendships. Right.
And I was even the same in terms of like, I didn't even love, like I grew up with three sisters, hell, and my actual girlfriends, I wasn't really into having a lot of girlfriends. Mm-hmm. I'd rather hang out with the boys. So we all have different things that are related to that femme wound, mm-hmm. I think in some way. And now I know that you're totally like, you're dancing and like you send me dance videos and you're like in like barely any clothes and you're just with my hand. you're so in love with your body.
Well, and you're not trying to
look a certain way.
So along the healing journey, I use different outlets to numb and to, avoid the pain. So, you know, after being raped, you use sex with everyone, and alcohol, obviously, mm-hmm. To just numb, numb everything out, because I couldn't stand being in my body, mm-hmm. Because my body was worthless and my body was used. And, if they don't respect my body, why should I respect my mm-hmm. body? So then another outlet became excessive spending for me. And then another, I mean, this also goes with like why I was, you know, misdiagnosed for so many years. They were treating me for depression and bipolar and things like that, and trying to get me on all these meds and stuff. And, now it's PTSD is what I'm officially diagnosed with. I'm not on any medication and I haven't been for quite some time. But along the journey, once you realize that like, oh, it's, you know, not really acceptable or healthy to just be sleeping with everyone, or it's not really acceptable to be just drinking all the time. Once I started kind of nipping all of these, you know, bad habits or these external comforts in the butt, food was the last only acceptable kind of, you know, kind of thing that would externally comfort me. And so because of that, and then because of my ankle surgery, you know, I weight gain started happening. But previously, you know, I was way the other way with my body, and was very skinny and had eating disorders that way. So now it was more of like a disordered kind of eating. But I would not let that healing kind of start unless I knew it was from a loving place. There is nothing wrong with my body. There is nothing wrong with being, you know, a little bit overweight. There is nothing wrong like with having curves and with jiggling and things like that. But so I wanted to do it from a loving place.
And that's where you are now.
That's where I am now, where I'm like, okay, so if absolutely nothing with my body changed at all, and I stayed this weight and stayed this everything, I would still love myself totally and wholly mm-hmm. and fully and completely. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I could work out a little bit more, or I could, you know, eat a bit better and stop eating so much processed foods.
And that's that balance of I love myself, but I can also be healthier. I know that I could be, but it's like that doesn't mean that I don't love myself.
Right. Well, because remember your retreat, it was very healthy foods, and food was my outlet. And
you were also pissed.
I know. I was
so
pissed.
Where is the goddamn meat?
I called, no, it wasn't meat. It was, it was the candy and the chocolate. And I mean, I called my husband crying, and I was like, I think I might actually lose weight on this retreat. I was like, there's no outlet. There's no comfort. There's no, you know, yoga wasn't comfort. You know, I was like, I need to go for a run. Like, I need something. Like, I need an outlet, you know, mm-hmm. Instead of like an inlet, like looking inward,
there was nothing,
you know,
to escape with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I love that you just said how you verbalized that. Like, I wanted to do the body image, quote unquote, work from a loving place.
Yeah.
Rather than where most women and even men come at it from this place of, I hate my body and it looks like shit and I need to lose 20 pounds because I'm a fat ass or whatever, because, you know, I'm too jiggly. That's a lot of times where it comes from this place of very self-deprecating and self-loathing.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I almost
that's
like
not
going
to be successful.
Yeah. I almost basically halted everything, until I could feel it on the inside. Because I mean, there's some women, there's plenty of women who are bigger than me and they love every inch of their body. So it's like, if they could do it, why can't I do it?
Right.
And, so I wouldn't, I honestly like paused everything and wouldn't let any action happen until I knew it was from a loving place. And honestly, now I wake up every day and I'm like, okay, like what would feel most loving and like for my highest good today, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, I love that. That right there. Beautiful message in self-image and body image, I think. Yes, you've done the work of the feminine, like we talked about, some of that toolkit, but also that the things that you have been through are very feminine in a lot of ways in nature because of the mother wound and being raped and that sexual trauma and having body image issues. Those are all very much, I think, they feel, yes, they happen to men and to women, but I think they almost feel in some ways that, do you know what I mean? Like they almost feel like these feminine centric issues. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, it does.
Because women are so worried about what they look like.
Yeah.
And obviously they are predominantly the victim of rape and sexual abuse. And yeah.
Well, I mean, like, but yeah, I mean, so being a mother and like the womb space and all of that, yeah, it's all very, it was all very centered in a lot of my healing, a lot of my visions, a lot of my, like, you know, I'm a very visual person. So like anytime there would be something that would be healing or a topic that would be going on, I would have to kind of visualize it first externally and then, find a way to kind of, you know, dive into it that way.
So I am curious, like, what would you say to someone who is in the middle of whatever trauma that they're dealing with on their healing journey? You've come out on the other side and you're in this loving place? I know that's a huge question, but what would you want them to know? What would you want them to know? What would you want to say to them if they're in it right now and it feels hard and shitty and like I'm never going to get to that place of feeling good?
One of the things that I've honestly been saying a lot is that like I am the only me that will ever be. And this is my journey, that this is like, honestly, it is all about you. It is all about you. It's all about your healing. It's all about your heart. It's all about your life. You have to choose you and you have to love you. There was so much of my life that I hated me. I didn't like me at all. And then even this last big part of, you know, I was doing all of the internal work, but I didn't feel that the external kind of matched, because I would look in the mirror and I'd be like, oh, who is this overweight person? Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're the only you that will ever be. And if you don't fight for you, like who will, you know? It's like, it's up to you.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that is both the most powerful thing to hear and maybe the most empowering thing and also the most terrifying thing.
It is, but I mean, get a shovel, balls in your court. A shovel and start digging. I mean, like, honestly, you have to lean into the most uncomfortable shit. Like if you want to heal, like just bring it on. Just, you know, you got to do it.
Right. And no one is going to fix you.
Yeah.
No one is going to heal you, but you.
No one's
going
to save you. Yeah. You need to be the person that, yeah.
What I was doing here while you were talking on my phone, have you seen this little quote?
I don't think so.
Okay. If you don't recognize it, I'm going to read it to you. Yeah. So this goes perfectly in line with what you just said. And then I'm going to ask you a journal prompt. Literally, I just saw this on my feed. And let's see, who does this come from? This comes from Happy Whole Woman. And this little meme says, a healer does not heal you. A healer is someone who holds space for you while you awaken your inner healer so that you may hear yourself. Maryam Hasna. I love that. A healer does not heal you. A healer is someone who holds space for you while you awaken your inner healer so that you may heal yourself. Is that not what you just said?
Yeah.
You are your own healer.
Yeah.
I saw this today. And that's why when you were talking, I went on my phone. I wasn't checking a text. I was pulling up that quote because I thought, that is it. That is it. And that is exactly what you just said. Beautiful. Okay. So while you were talking, I also pulled this. And I think it goes in line with also what you just said. So I pulled you a question from the Goddess Edition journal deck. Write in your journal today about... Do you see the divine within you? Why or why not?
Ugh, absolutely. I mean, the universe is my spiritual mother, and I'm a piece of that. And she is, I mean, her name's Sheila, by the way, one of my guides. It came to me in one meditation, and I am so divine, and she is divine, and she is me. And of course, I mean, of course.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so beautiful. Huh. Wait, what was the first thing you said? Spiritual mother.
The universe is my spiritual mother.
The universe is my spiritual mother.
Mm. Yeah, I've created my own mother, basically.
Does God feel feminine to you?
Of course. It took a while to say because I was raised Catholic, but no, it's goddess. It's of course God.
Do you feel it's God and goddess, or does it feel more goddess to you?
I need a goddess. So
at this point in your life, that's
strong. I mean, and I'm not totally like, I mean, you know, my biological father is deceased. So, you know, I know that he is around, and, you know, I've had like psychic mediums readings where, you know, he's been present. But no, I need the womb. I need to be in the hand of the goddess.
And right, I think now that's fair to say, that it's not a rejection of saying you'll never see that the divine could feel like a masculine energy ever in at any point in your life. It might, but right now what you need...
for more than, you know, 27 how many years, it was always masculine.
Right,
but
and
right
like
now,
this is
I'm
what
leaning
you need
into the feminine. Yeah.
Right, and I think that that's something that is totally valid. And, you know, we all have different, ideas of what the divine is. But I love that you said that the universe is my spiritual mother and I am a child of that. I think that's so beautiful. And that you are also, you said I'm my own mother too, you mm-hmm. know? That's gorgeous. That's gorgeous. Ah. Thank you for being so vulnerable and real and raw and talking about, like I said earlier today, shitty shit, right? Like stuff that I don't think that, would you want to take those things back? I'm curious. Like if you could redo your life. Big question, Jen. Would you want to take the shitty shit back?
Would you be you? No, I mean, if I could have maybe like a couple more years of realization, but I mean, Saturn return, you know, 20, mm-hmm. like 29, 30 years, like that's when all this shit stirs up. So, mm-hmm. And that's really what these last 3 years have been for me, you know, Saturn return shows you a mirror and shows right. you who you are.
And it's not about being, this is how I view it. It's not about being grateful that like, oh, you're grateful that you were, you know, not wanted by your... No, you were grateful, though, for the lessons that came from those things.
Yeah, and I finally feel like that, like, yes, like, you know, it's a cyclical journey. Like, I'm always going to be healing different layers of it. But I think at least all of my cards are down. Like, at least I know the landscape of this journey. And I know, you know, there's enough boundaries around everything and...
Doesn't feel like a landmine is going to go off.
No, it's not exactly. I've already dug through all of them. I know what's out there. Right. But yeah.
So now it's like, does it feel like a place of sustainability now? Like, how do I stay in this place? Is that how it kind of feels? Like,
no, I mean, life happens and stuff's going to happen. I understand that. But no, I don't. My foundation is thick, and my castle walls are incredible, and I'm just gonna keep shining. I don't know. I'm just really, really happy and really in a good spot right now. Right. So,
are you still in therapy?
I am. Yeah, I am.
Does it feel different?
No. Well, I mean, because every couple months or every couple weeks, I'm always like, okay, so what's next? Okay, so what's next? You know, and like I always, you know, want to see like, okay, like do I need to dig down into another layer? Do I like, you know, what's next? I mean, this is my journey. So.
I guess that's my question, though, is then what is that right now? I know I keep asking you more questions, but what does that look like, though, now? Like,
well,
you're at this good
place.
Well,
one of my big questions was, you know, in order to, like, finish putting the last kind of, you know, healing stamp on the mother was, you know, do I need to be a mother myself? Mm-hmm. So that's kind
and
of
that's
been,
where you are.
Been one of the things, mm-hmm. You know, because mm-hmm. honestly, like, it's kind of scary thinking about being a mother, because, you know, I don't want to be, it's so easy to think earthly mother and say, I don't want to be like that exact, you know, type of mother that I had. But when I think spiritual mother and I think of all of the things that I could be that, you know, that I needed, and I think it would be fantastic to be a mother. So,
yeah.
Because I mean, Rebecca Campbell, once you heal yourself, you heal all of your, you
lineages.
Know, lineage,
right?
Pre
absolutely,
and past,
I believe that.
You know, so
I do believe that.
And I did a shit ton of work.
You did a lot of work, girl.
So everything's pretty much healed. My child should be fantastic.
That's a good point. Yeah, and that's exactly I think what I was getting to was like where you are now. So thank you for answering that. I appreciate that. I think that's what I was getting to. Yeah, because I wanted to be real, like that. It, like you said, it's an ever evolving process. It doesn't mean like, all right, all the work's done. I'm going to be blissfully happy for the rest of my life for the next, you know, 50 years. Absolutely not. But you are in a great place right now.
And the last thing, I guess, is just being held by the divine masculine, right? During all of this work, my husband has been absolutely incredible. We've been together, you know, 9.5 years. And one of the most things that he said to me recently was, I love how you're striving to be a better person against all of your genetic and familial odds. Like, I just, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, he doesn't say this, he doesn't say that, but then he'll come out with
and
these,
you're like, where
these,
did that
these
come
big
from?
Boomers. And I'm just like, holy cow. So
let me sit in that
again. I know, like having that support and having that being held by that divine masculine energy is...
We love you,
nothing
Ed.
Nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Okay, well, on that note, this time I'm really saying thank you for being willing to talk to a bunch of strangers of here course. On the podcast and share your story and be real and raw. And did you have fun?
I did.
As much fun as it could be to talk about that stuff.
It's just a different life. It's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is what it is, and it's different, you know.
Well, you are, for me, the epitome of healing through the feminine, like I said. So
I wrote that note in my journal.
On that note.
When you called me.
Okay. I love that. I think I'm in your journal a lot, and I love it. I love how we're connected, and just thank you.
Of course.
All right, friends. Can you believe that it is the end of 2019? That means that 2020 is right around the corner, which means that season 5 is right around the corner. And if you didn't already hear, I announced season 5's theme on my Instagram at Alyssa Cousins. That's AlyssaKuzins. I announced the season 5 theme. Let me give a drum roll. It is relationships as self-care. Because as Danielle Laporte says, relationships are everything. So I don't want to go into all of the detail about the different categories that we're going to be doing, but what I do want to talk about here, well, number one, I think I'm going to come out with a trailer teaser for season 5. Later on in December, I think I'm going to have that come out. But for right now, what I want you to know is that the theme is relationships as self-care. And this is not exclusive to romantic relationships. I think when I say that word, we automatically go, you know, straight to, oh, she's talking about dating and romance, right? That's not how I'm approaching this season. These are going to be all different kinds of relationships that we have in our lives. I've narrowed them down to 5. I probably could have done even more, obviously, but these are like the big ones that I want to focus on. Again, I want to do a little bit more of an in-depth teaser trailer later on in December that's going to come out as just a little mini-sode. This already has been a long episode, so I don't want to keep talking to you here, but I did want you to know that season 5 is happening. It does start Tuesday, January 7th, and it is all about relationships as self-care. So with that being said, I hope you are so excited about that theme. I truly hope that you have enjoyed listening to these episodes about healing and doing the deep inner work to heal ourselves, because as Jen said, nobody is going to do this work for us. Healing is truly a journey that you have to take on your own and be willing to do on your own and for yourself, right? So before I leave you for 2019, well, I guess technically not, because I have a mini episode about the teaser trailer. But before I leave you for this final big episode of 2019, I've said it before and I'll say it again. There are 750,000 plus podcasts, according to a recent statistic from Apple Podcasts, I believe. 750,000 plus podcasts. And the fact that 1,000 and plus of you are tuning in every month to listen to my show, The Self-Care Spotlight. I deeply thank you. And don't forget that if you want to continue to do this deep internal self-care work and healing, that is why not only I made the podcast, but when I'm not on the podcast and you're not listening to me, I have this amazingly beautiful product that Jen and I talked about called the Journal Deck. It's a 52-card deck that is full of journal prompts. So we have a line of them. We have 2 different decks, the Goddess Edition that Jen answered from today, and then the OG. And we also have a custom journal that goes with them that has a space right there for your daily journal prompt or weekly journal prompt. So if you want info on those, they make a gorgeous gift that you can either gift yourself this holiday season
or gift to someone else, and I will put the link for that in the show notes. Otherwise, I hope that the end of this year, that you're able to wind down with self-care and hopefully slow down a little bit amongst the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, and just remember what this time of celebrating and winter is all about. I hope that you're able to go into 2020 with peace and clarity and love in your heart. I'll see you soon.